Radio.
Dear brothers and sisters, welcome to the third part of this little series. First time we looked at the symphony, second time we were looking at the door of faith, thinking, reflecting about crossing the threshold of this door of faith. And now I'd like you to look together with me at a little boy, at a young boy. This young boy, he lives in a gospel. He lives in the Gospel of John in chapter 6. I know you have met this boy many times. You have met him so often when you stood in church, listened to the priest proclaiming this gospel. Still, allow me to take you again to this place. After this, Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. A large crowd kept following him because they had seen the signs that he does. Jesus goes up to a mountain. Now the Passover, the festival of the Jews, was near. Jesus looks up and he sees a large crowd coming towards him. Now Jesus turns to one of his apostles, to Philip, and he says, Philip, do we get bread for this many people to eat? And then it says, Jesus said this to test him, to test Philip. For he himself, Jesus, he knew what he was going to do. Philip looks at Jesus and says, 6 months' wages would not buy enough bread for this crowd. So Philip kind of saying, impossible, don't even try. One of his disciples, Andrew, another one, he says to Jesus, there is a boy. Here comes our boy. There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But Andrew says, what are they among so many people? Because that's even much less than what Philip was thinking about. Still, Andrew, he has this little boy. How did he find this little boy? And 5,000 people. I like this boy. I don't think that Andrew just grabbed him and pulled him to Jesus. I think the boy just came by himself. I think this little boy, he figured that Jesus was looking for bread. Jesus was looking to meet somehow the needs of this crowd. Somehow this little boy was not so concerned with whether it was enough what he had to offer or not. So I imagine this boy going to one of the apostles. So he meets Andrew and he says, dear apostle, I have something to give to the master. And I imagine Andrew saying, well, what do you have? He said, I have 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. You can see the smile on Andrew's face. Kind of saying, what? But the boy probably kind of insisted, let me show him. So, Andrew coming with this boy to Jesus, kind of thinking, look, I'm really ridiculous here, like, you know, 5 loaves, 5,000 people. Then I imagine, this is all my imagination, okay? I imagine this boy was probably sent by his parents to go shopping for 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish to bring them home. On the way, he finds this huge crowd, listens to Jesus, doesn't understand anything, but is, wow, Jesus, And so now he comes and he says, look, I have 5 loaves and 2 fish. Probably Andrew expected also that Jesus says, nice try, little boy. Look, it just really doesn't help us. 5,000 people, 5 loaves of bread. Keep them, go home, bless your parents, and sorry, it doesn't help us. And we all know that Jesus just does not say that. Jesus, facing those 5,000 people, seeing this boy coming, I have 5 loaves and 2 fish. And Jesus says, and great, we take your 5 loaves, your 2 fish, and we will feed with this 5,000 people. By the way, the boy did not give 4 loaves and kept 1 for himself. Because he figured, even as a young boy, if I give him my 5 loaves, there's nothing to eat for me left after this goes into 5,000 people. The boy gives everything to Jesus. He holds nothing back. He gives all he has, not thinking what will happen to him after he gave everything. He must have kind of figured that Jesus does care. Anyway, so Jesus says, and give me what you have, as insignificant as it might seem to you. I take this. See, Jesus does not feed by 5,000 in a magic way, snipping his fingers and manna raining from the sky. Jesus takes what the boy has, and with that, he does this miracle. There's something similar, long time before, with an older man. The man was 80 years old by then. His name is Moses, also one of my friends. And you know the story when he went to the burning bush and he has this conversation with God, with the Lord in the bush. And you know, like how he's trying to get out of this whole thing. Then he kind of halfway agrees. And then he says, well, but suppose they do not believe me or listen to me. But they say the Lord did not appear to you. You know, you try to make me lead a whole people out of Egypt. So what if they just don't listen to me? Man, this is a huge task. How to do this? And then the Lord said to him, what is it in your hand? It says in Exodus in chapter 4, first verse, what is it in your hand? Moses says, well, nothing. You know, this is just my stuff I use to tend the sheep or the goats. What, I don't know what it is. What to do with a stupid piece of wood? Well, the Lord, he just doesn't care what stupid thing. He says, we work with what you have. Now, why would we, in this little series, talk about this little boy and this old man? If you go through scriptures, you will find more places where God takes the little that we have and he does something with it that we would have never even imagined he could do with it. There is a principle that of course is visible ever since, but St. Thomas Aquinas, good man, he puts it in a very simple phrase, grace perfects nature. Grace perfects nature. That is what happened to that boy. See, grace does not bypass nature. Grace does not ignore nature. Grace does not destroy nature. Grace takes what you have and builds on that. Just imagine that little boy after the 5,000 were fed. Maybe one of the baskets that were collected was given to the boy. And he tries to carry the big basket home. comes home to his family. Do you know what happened? I just gave the bread 5,000 people, man. And he tells the story to his parents. Only because he understood that grace does not ignore the little we have. Grace does not ignore nature. It builds on it. God builds on our 5 loaves to feed 5,000. Whatever our loaves mean and whatever the feeding of 5,000 means. Why we talk about this here? Well, we would easily agree that we need faith to know the Lord. We would easily agree that we need faith to grow as disciples. We somehow wish and we somehow expect that it happens supernaturally, meaning without nature. We expect it to happen in spite of what we have. We do not expect it to happen with what we have. Somehow we would read the gospel of this beautiful young boy, but we would expect in our life that Jesus does the big things without our 5 loaves, somehow supernaturally, without our natural, without our nature. We somehow expect that Jesus overrides our nature instead of building with it, through it, and on it. And here, our church teaches clearly that Jesus does not override, does not ignore, does not just put his hand on it, I don't see that, it's not necessary, insignificant, let me do the big thing. No, he looks, what you have. Like he told Moses, what you have in your hand? Oh, stupid stuff. Okay, that one we use. And when you read the story of Moses, you will see that this stuff did a lot of things. Big things. Pope John Paul II, he wrote an encyclical that had the beautiful name, Faith and Reason. In the very first lines, he writes the following sentence. Faith and reason are like two wings on which the human spirit rises to the contemplation of truth. And he continues, God has placed in the human heart, now this is my heart, God has placed in my heart a desire to know the truth. See, there's in us a desire, a yearning, a quest, a striving to come to know the truth. But not the truth as in mathematical terms, like, you know, like the solution to an equation. It's not the 3 times 3 is 9 truth. Here the truth is the person of Jesus. Here the truth is the one true reality. This truth is the truth where Jesus says, I am the truth. There is a desire in our hearts to know this truth, to get to know this truth, to come closer and closer to this truth. Now John Paul II says, to come to this truth, our spirit, us, we have to rise. Okay. That what helps us rise, that what helps us to arrive to the contemplation of this truth are 2 wings. Of course, you see then the picture in the background of this picture, the 2 wings of a bird. Now, can you imagine a bird flying with 1 wing? If the bird could fly with one wing, I imagine it would fly in circles, if at all. The two wings are faith and reason. Faith is the grace, reason is the nature. And John Paul II says, on those two wings, we rise to the contemplation of truth. We cannot ignore either one of those two wings. We do not rise just by faith. The boy, how blessed he was, because he gave what he has. That is our nature, and Jesus does not ignore it. He says, okay, that is where we build on. This is where we work with. Peter Kreeft is a pretty well known, he's a philosopher, I think, by profession. He's a professor somewhere in America. A wonderful man, writing many very good books. Helps us a lot to understand much of our faith. And in one of those, he writes these lines: grace perfects nature. Rather than ignoring, denying, minimizing, weakening, bypassing, or rivaling it. Grace is not the rival of nature. They are not two opposites. This is, he continues, perhaps the most pervasive, ubiquitous, that means like everywhere, and important difference between Catholic and Protestant theology. Yeah, I guess you want to listen to this again. Grace perfects nature, okay. It doesn't destroy it. It's not an opposite. It doesn't minimize it. It doesn't weaken it, okay. And now he says, this principle that grace perfects nature is perhaps the most pervasive, ubiquitous, and important difference between Catholic and Protestant theology. Now, there is much to say about this, we don't. But here we are looking at this because in Protestant thinking, there is a suspicion of nature. There is more the idea of Christ bypassing nature, saying, well, not so bad, I overcome what you have, I overcome what you are, and bypassing it. They also very often do not like so much chapter 6 in the Gospel of John. It's where Jesus talks a lot about like bread and him being the living bread and so forth. There is a suspicion of nature. And as a consequence, also a suspicion of reason. So most Protestants would really not buy what John Paul II says. That to come to contemplate the truth, which is Christ, we need two wings, faith and reason. Grace and nature. What John Paul says, if you want to feed 5,000, you need to bring your 5 loaves. The 5 loaves alone do not feed 5,000, but the 5 loaves with the grace of Christ, they feed 5,000 every day if you want. Faith and reason then are not two opposites. There's not one against the other. Now, our reluctance to dive into the teaching of the Church, our reluctance to see and to take the teaching of the Church that we also see in the Catechism as something that forms us, to see it as something where we meet God, to see it as something that helps us in the contemplation of the truth. Could it be that our reluctance comes a bit from being formed by this idea that grace bypasses nature? Could it be that from so many sources that we use, we have taken, knowing or not, this idea that God bypasses nature, that He does not use reason? See, of course, reason is given to us. Like all of us, we have gone at least to some kind of school, and we have said and we have figured 2 + 2 = 4. So we have reason as given to us. Why would God have given reason to you? So that you can feed your family, because you went to school, you learned a job, and now you can earn money to feed your family. You think He has given you reason so you can get a driver's license? Maybe He has given you reason so you can, I don't know, write a book or whatever you do. Yeah, use reason to do that, but why God has given you reason in the first place is to know Him. That's the one thing we need in our life, to know Him. The first use of reason is not the driver's license, not the becoming a professor. The first use of reason is to know Him. Why would we think that in coming to know Him, we should not use that what He has given us? That is why John Paul II says, we need faith and reason, grace and nature. We need two wings. You might say, what? But reason can go strange ways. We can really think strange thoughts. Yeah, it's true. But you see, this is why we have the teaching of the Church as a safeguard. In our reason, in our using what He has given us, we are not becoming teachers of the Church. We are becoming sons and daughters of Mother Church, asking her to teach us, not us teaching her. We want to learn from her, and the learning, we involve our reason. There is, and you see in many talks and courses, seminars, people, they have managed to fill great positions in companies, because they have learned a lot. They have used their reason a lot. But somehow, it's difficult to get them to use the same reason when it comes to know God. Why? Let us not be afraid to use and to give our 5 loaves and our 2 fish. Even if they already stink. There is some in the Catechism, something said about faith that I like to also mention here. It says, faith seeks understanding. That is like you can compare it. If you would think of a heat-seeking missile, that's an evil device. A heat-seeking missile, that is this missile that is shot and it runs after the airplane, after the engine, because it's hot. And wherever this plane goes, this missile follows until it hits the heat in that engine. It gets a heat-seeking missile. So that missile doesn't rest until it hits this heat. Faith is an understanding-seeking missile. Faith does not rest. Faith seeks to understand. It's an old saying from some fathers of the church, fides querens intellectum. Faith seeks understanding. It is intrinsic to faith that a believer desires to know better the one in whom he has put his faith. It is intrinsic to faith. It is part of faith. It is not like there's faith and additionally, some people also seek to understand. It is part of faith. It belongs to faith to seek to understand the one in whom we have put our faith. And to seek to understand better what he has revealed, not what I would like to be revealed. To seek to understand better what he has revealed. By the way, this is all in the Catechism 158. Then they continue in the same paragraph. A more penetrating knowledge will call forth a greater faith. And a particular faith. It will call forth a greater faith, increasingly set afire by love. So, it is not understanding for understanding's sake. This is understanding for growing in faith. This is understanding for growing in faith and experiencing how here a fire of love burns all the more. This fire of love that burns here makes me even seek harder to understand better the one whom I love and all that he has revealed. St. Augustine, they quote, I believe in order to understand, and I understand the better to believe. This seeking understanding is a bit like a child. See, when you have children, they're always asking. There's a period when they can start speaking, they start reasoning, they keep asking. They just hit you with questions all the time. You get tired because they always come with the why is this, why is this? And then you think you answered one of the questions and you open another five. It's just like making it worse. They just keep on asking. Why? Because they want to know. They seek. And then we send them to our schools, and then the asking dies. We kind of quench something in them, I think. But this is a different topic. Only the dead person doesn't ask. Asking as a sign of life. Asking, seeking as a sign of vibrant life. And the Lord is inviting us to seek. The two wings of faith and reason on which you rise to the contemplation of truth, they are your wings, they are your faith, and they are your reason. Because it is your contemplation. It is your rising. That is why it is your wings. It is your shape of wings. It is your faith. It is your depth of faith. It is your reason. It is your power of reason, not someone else's. It should not be. We don't want it to be. My wings are my wings and they have my shape. So we are supposed to bring our five loaves and not the bakery that someone else might have. Nobody expects you to bring a bakery if it is five loaves that you have. Nobody expects you to have a faith that someone else has. No one expects you to have a reasoning that someone else has. But that what you have, where you are, bring that. Take that. Take the reasoning you have, the faith that you have, the one you have today. Bring it to Jesus and see how he takes it. That what you have, and he, with his grace, what he makes of it. If you have time in your groups, in your community, if you have time at home, maybe you would like to share a bit about something like, on how many wings do I fly? Or are both wings healthy? Or is one really limping and I fly in circles? You might also recount occasions where you have given Christ your five loaves. You might share that occasion, and you might also share what happened when you did give your five loaves. My encouragement will be to use two wings and seek the strengthening of the one wing that is weaker. Next and the last little talk, we will look to Indiana Jones. I wish you a blessed time of sharing till then. God bless you.